Welcome to the Veterans of Peace Radio Hour and podcast on Radio Free Nashville, 107.1 and 103.7, and streaming live at RadioFreeNashville.org.
I'm telling you, you are an instrument collectively. You're an instrument for justice. You're an instrument for humanity. You're an instrument for peace.
That was Shahid Bolson talking about the student protesters, and you will hear more from him along with clips from others about the student protesters, both positive and negative. And also, we're going to include the Veterans for Peace official stance. But first, my name is Jim Wolgamuth, and I'm here with fellow Vietnam veteran Harvey Bennett. We're members of Veterans for Peace. Veterans for Peace is an international organization of military veterans and allies whose collective efforts are to build a culture of peace, humanity, equality, and justice. Just go to veteransforpeace.org. This radio show and podcast is on stations across the country thanks to the Pacifica Radio Network. We're also on SoundCloud, Anchor Podcast, Spotify, and your phone podcast app. Just search Veterans for Peace. The Veterans for Peace Radio Hour and Radio Free Nashville are supported in part by you, the listener, because it is you that keeps Radio Free Nashville going. And as a result, this radio show is then picked up by the Pacifica Radio Network so that we are heard across the country. So if you think this is important, just go to RadioFreeNashville.org and click on the donate button and keep Harvey and I on the air across the country. Harvey, we don't have a guest speaker because we're going to share some lies from liars. And then we're going to have some clips, and then we'll let the people make the call.
Some of it from truth tellers.
First of all, I was so angry. I was just off the rails after I listened to Biden and Johnson on Holocaust Remembrance Day,
yes,
weaponizing the Holocaust against the students on the campuses. And you shared something. How many campuses are?
I think it was 200 that list I showed you.
Yeah.
That's global.
200 campuses. I just thought, I can't stand it. I just can't deal with it. Biden and Johnson were awful. I have not heard such blatant lies since Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. I'm not a crook. Mm-hmm. And the Maddox and Turner Joy were attacked in the Gulf of Tonkin.
It's worse than those other things, which were clearly the routine lies that all states do, governments do to justify whatever it is they want to do.
Yeah,
but this is an attempt to stir division and suspicion in the U.S. among us, among the people in this country. You know, it's so cynical and so manipulative. And so to me, it's just stupid. And I can't believe that the American public is going to listen to that. And
I'm hoping not.
And agree with it. It's just such total nonsense.
So I actually tried to figure out how I could comment on it. And I couldn't really figure out a way to comment and stay relatively calm without just going off the rails.
Yeah.
And so I did find this clip from Glenn Greenwald,
who happens to be Jewish.
I thought, well, I'll play some of the better parts of this because I think he calmly, which I really couldn't do, he calmly describes what he heard.
And he disposes of it quite easily.
Quite easily. So here's Glenn Greenwald from his show System Update.
And here was Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, who, along with Joe Biden, went to the Holocaust Remembrance Ceremony. And here is what he said about the alleged rise of this epidemic of anti-Semitism in the United States.
Strasbourg, we're at the heart of Renaissance and intellectual life. But it was at those same elite centers of learning where Jewish faculty and students were suddenly expelled, where anti-Jewish courses were introduced, and where professors performed horrific pseudoscience experiments on Jewish people.
Do you understand what Mike Johnson is saying here? It's so offensive when you think about it, both in terms of its intellectual dishonesty, but also its moral offense. He's speaking at a Holocaust memorial ceremony, and he's talking about the Nazi attack on Jewish students and Jewish professors, and he's trying to equate that to what's taking place in the United States today. There are no Jewish students being expelled. There are no Jewish members of the faculty being expelled.
Now, I did want to stop right there real quick, just to update, because our friend who we interviewed from the Vanderbilt campus, he was Jewish, and he may not have been expelled, but he was suspended. Now, why? Because he was siding with the protesters asking to boycott, divest, and sanction Israel for what they're doing to Gaza.
Well, and all these students across the country who have been suspended or expelled or arrested, many of them have been Jewish.
Exactly. So I just wanted to update that. So I know what Glenn is saying right there. He's saying, well, listen, we don't have the similar situation to the Holocaust. Jewish kids aren't being suspended because they're Jewish. No, Jewish kids are being suspended because they're supporting the boycott, divestment, and sanctions.
Calling for divestment and yes, and supporting the human rights of Palestinians.
Exactly. So, well, back to Glenn.
There are no Jewish students being violently attacked. In fact, he cites one example, which you're about to hear, that is a complete hoax. And the fact that the only example he can cite of supposedly having Jewish students attacked violently on American campuses is a hoax, that's the only example he has, just proves the entire narrative that both he and, as you'll see, Joe Biden are both trying to push. But to equate what's happening on American campuses, where American students are exercising their First Amendment right to protest against their own government and the Israeli government's war policies, and trying to tell American Jews that they face a second Holocaust in the United States, and therefore the government has to step in with all these special protections and abridgments of free speech, is obnoxious and dangerous and deceitful.
We remember what happened then, and now today, we are witnessing American universities quickly becoming hostile places for Jewish students and faculty. The very campuses which were once the envy of the International Academy have succumbed to an anti-Semitic virus. Students who were known for producing academic papers are now known for stabbing their Jewish peers in the eyes with Palestinian flags.
Okay, that is an absolute lie out of Mike Johnson's mouth. First of all, he used the plural. Jewish students are being stabbed in the eye with the Palestinian flag. There's one instance where that claim was made. And once people saw the video, they realized it was a total hoax, perpetrated by Barry Weiss's Free Press and by the claims of the student. We showed you the Matt Orfella video where he compiled all the different media accounts where they were just mindlessly reciting this claim. She was appearing on media. There was nothing wrong with her eye, nothing wrong with her face. She wasn't even remotely injured. In fact, she herself said the only symptom she had was a dull headache. And the video showed that she was standing there to counter-protest the protesters, and they were marching by. And they were waving Palestine flags or Free Palestine flags, and one of them accidentally brushed her, and she began screeching, "He stabbed me in the eye!" And this language, that there are Jewish students being stabbed in the eye, is designed to evoke a hoax, a hate crime hoax, that there are pro-Palestinian protesters walking around taking flags and stabbing Jewish students in the eye. Why would you make up a hoax at a Holocaust memorial ceremony? And that transition of saying, oh, remember in the late 1930s and the 1940s, what was done to American Jews in Nazi Germany? And he said, and then today we're seeing similar things. Moral panic, this attempt to fabricate an anti-Semitism epidemic.
Nowhere in that talk that Johnson and Biden gave did they mention the former head of Jewish studies at Dartmouth, professor, being thrown to the ground, you know, a woman in her 60s, handcuffed, were asking the police what they were doing to one of her students.
Exactly.
The director of Jewish studies.
At Dartmouth.
No mention of the Zionist thugs at UCLA who, you know, sent 25 students to the hospital.
Of course not.
I don't know how many of those students were Jewish, but I'm sure a significant amount were, because they've been really central to these protests.
but we probably won't hear about them.
No.
Back to Glenn.
And the fact that he has to grab onto a hoax, one claim that turned out to be debunked and a lie, and turn it into some kind of common occurrence on American campuses where Jewish students are being routinely violently attacked is a lie. It is false.
And with our survivors before us, if you close your eyes in the quietness of your own heart, you can almost hear the glass of Jewish storefronts shattered by stormtroopers.
Off the rails.
This is disgusting.
Off the rails.
This is just absolutely revolting, repulsive. You in the United States, if you're a Jew, can basically hear the sound of Nazi stormtroopers smashing the windows of Jewish stores. Where is he getting that from? Is there a second Holocaust coming in the United States? Is the United States systematically bigoted against American Jews? Are there Nazi gangs roving the streets, attacking Jewish businesses, expelling Jews from faculty? None of this is happening. This is a sick fabrication that he is spreading and affirming in part for political reasons, obviously, but also to justify all of the repressive measures that he, leading the Congress, has adopted, including that attack on free speech that I began the show by talking about.
You could see fathers being executed at point blank in the ghettos. You can feel a brother's hand slipping out of his sister's as men in uniforms separate them into lines, and they can only mouth to one another, "Everything will be okay," hoping that it would be. You can hear screams coming from the gas chambers. And it's in these troubling times we must look to this audience, to the survivors of the Holocaust and their descendants, to help us remember and to bear witness. Several weeks ago, I am very proud to report to you that the United States Congress overwhelmingly passed security assistance to Israel to help protect its borders. That's right. And we kept our promise that we made decades ago, never again.
I have to check, but I believe Mike Johnson was in Congress on January 6th, and I assume he was in that camp that defended it, even though there were people chanting "Jews will not replace us," wearing Camp Auschwitz t-shirts and t-shirts that said 6MWE, 6 million wasn't enough. Did he mention any of that? Did he mention the 11 killed at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh by a person quoting Donald Trump as he murdered these people? Don't remember that. I mean, there are crazies out there. There are neo-Nazis out there, but they're not students demonstrating on these campuses.
They're not the students. Okay, back to Glenn.
Here is Joe Biden, as always, sounding exactly like Mike Johnson when he spoke at the same event.
Germany, 1933. Hitler and his Nazi party rise to power by rekindling one of the world's oldest forms of prejudice and hate, anti-Semitism. His rule didn't begin with mass murder. It started slowly across economic, political, social, and cultural life. Propaganda demonizing Jews, boycotts of Jewish businesses, synagogues defaced with swastikas, harassment of Jews in the street and in the schools, anti-Semitic demonstrations, pogroms, organized riots. With the indifference of the world, Hitler knew he could expand his reign of terror. Now, here we are, not 75 years later, but just 7.5 months later.
7.5 months later, Joe. Joe, I want to tell you, history did not start on October 7th.
See, the same thing. He talked about the Holocaust, the extermination of Jews, the systemic exclusion of Jews from life in Germany, and then made that same transition that Mike Johnson did to suggest that the American Jews are facing the same dangers today. We had Batya Unger-Sargon on our show last night, who is a very vocal and longstanding supporter of Israel and a Jewish American activist. And she heaped scorn on this attempt to convince American Jews that they should be neurotic and be afraid to leave their homes, that the United States has become systematically hostile to them. that they need censorship protection and a bunch of other protections. The Jewish Journal Tablet, as we said last week, editorialized against it as well, saying don't exploit the needs of our minority group to usher in a bunch of authoritarian measures supposedly designed to protect us. We don't need this protection. But so many people are wrapped up in this moral panic coming from our leaders that basically American Jews are facing a second Holocaust, that anti-war students are running around stabbing Jewish students in the eye with a Palestinian flag, basically poking their eyes out and rendering them blind, all based on a single incident that was a complete hoax. Do you see how Mike Johnson and Joe Biden are reading from exactly the same script? Because both of this is all coming from both political parties.
They forget it. They're already forgetting that Hamas unleashed this terror. It was Hamas that brutalized Israelis. It was Hamas who took and continues to hold hostages. I have not forgotten, nor have you, and we will not forget. We've seen a ferocious surge of anti-Semitism in America and around the world. Vicious propaganda on social media. Jews forced to keep their hide, their keepers under baseball hats, tuck their Jewish stars into their shirts. On college campuses, Jewish students blocked, harassed, attacked while walking to class. Anti-Semitism, anti-Semitic posters, slogans calling for the annihilation of Israel, the world's only Jewish state. But there is no place on any campus in America, any place in America, for anti-Semitism or hate speech or threats of violence of any kind.
Now, at least Joe Biden is being consistent in the sense that Democrats have been saying this for more than a decade, that we need more censorship and speech regulation on campus to prevent hate speech and various forms of bigotry. It's Republicans who had been saying that this is an authoritarian hoax until they finally found a group with which they have some connection, for which they have some empathy, and suddenly they jumped on this same narrative that the Democrats have been using for a decade to perpetuate censorship and to create moral panics over bigotry and minorities being unsafe. And this is not just rhetoric. We have seen a large number of attacks on free speech, the banning of pro-Palestinian groups on American campuses, the attempt to enact into federal law prohibitions on expressing a whole range of views that are critical of Israel or American Jews that you can say about any other country or any other group. And as always, the foundation for it is this fear-mongering campaign that benefits politicians who want to impose those kind of measures, and yet depends upon feeding American citizens absolute lies about the state of Jewish Americans in the United States.
There was Glenn Greenwald, and you can see his whole episode, his whole show on Rumble. Just search Glenn Greenwald and he'll come up. So, but
yeah,
he's all over Rumble.
There's also, you know, a real trend right now from Congress and from AIPAC-funded Zionists that these students are providing material support to terrorists. You know, they're being tarred as terrorist supporters. So, you know, how long is it going to be before they're become criminalized for their opinions?
I've got another clip, because in opposition to the New York Times, we try to get two sources. So I got a clip from Crystal and Sagar, and they talk about this also. Let's get their perspective.
We are extraordinarily fortunate to be joined this morning by Francesca Albanese. She is an international lawyer and also the UN's special rapporteur for human rights in the occupied territories. Welcome. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
Well, Francesca, I guess you can take comfort in the fact that you are far from alone in being labeled as anti-Semitic for your views with regard to what Israel is doing in the Gaza Strip. I'm sure you're familiar with the discourse here, including from the President of the United States, about the campus protesters that have, you know, these protests have really taken off across the country. Students who are calling for a ceasefire, who are calling for the U.S. to end their support for what they see as you do as a genocide. I wanted to get your reaction to Speaker of the House Mike Johnson made some very noteworthy comments on Holocaust Remembrance Day about these protests and the character of these protests. Let's take a listen to that.
Nope. We're not doing it.
You heard it already.
I can't do it. I have to edit this show, and I am so sick of hearing Mike Johnson. So
we're going to hear her response.
Yes, they're going to hear her response.
So, Francesca, first, just to correct the record, there are no documented incidents of anyone being stabbed with the eye by a flag or any other thing. Just wanted to put that out there. But here you see the Speaker of the House labeling American students, equating them to Nazis, very much echoing the rhetoric of Israeli President Benjamin Netanyahu. This has been used to justify quite an extensive crackdown and criminalization of these protests. I wonder what your reaction as an international human rights lawyer is, both to this language, but also to the response to these campus protests.
Well, let me react on the remarks first. I find Speaker Johnson's remarks both infelicitous and inaccurate. The comparative allusions of college campus protests against Israel's conduct in Gaza, because this is what we are talking about, to anti-Semitism, to the heinous, awful, revolting anti-Semitism that led to the Holocaust, is not only historically inappropriate, but also functions to divert the attention from the substantive issues at hand, namely the growing body of evidence regarding the atrocity crimes committed in Gaza, that clearly this young generation globally across the world cannot stomach anymore. I also found that this rhetorical tactic exploiting the memory of the Holocaust, instrumentalizing one of the history's greatest atrocities for contemporary purposes, is unacceptable. Because
what she made a really good point right there, because we all know, if you study history, we all know the Holocaust was over the top, horrible, terrible, the worst that ever happened. And so when Biden and Johnson start equating what the college campus kids are doing, or what the pro-Palestinian protesters are doing to it, and comparing it to the Nazis and the Holocaust, you diminish the effect of the Holocaust, of remembering the Holocaust, of remembering the gas chambers. And what they're doing is they're weaponizing the Holocaust to its detriment, because people are going to think, well, if this is like the Holocaust, then the Holocaust wasn't that bad. And
not
the Holocaust was terrible.
If, I mean, that would be like saying during the Holocaust, 6 million Jews felt really uncomfortable.
Perfect.
Because that's what they're complaining about. Jewish
exactly.
Students on campus feeling uncomfortable because they're hearing free Palestine.
Yeah. Back to Crystal and Francesca Albanese, the UN rapporteur.
It undermines the gravity and uniqueness of the Holocaust while simultaneously obscuring the pressing concerns in the occupied Palestinian territory. And I believe that as we aim to foster a constructive and respectful discourse, it is crucial that historical comparisons are made with careful considerations of their accuracy and their implications. And going to the protests in US campuses, I can tell as a European, this is spreading across the world. Anyone, including, I mean, I live in an Arab country, and everyone is looking at these young people as the most courageous, and I do share this view. So I keep on saying to, I hope that they stay peaceful and respectful, and I isolate any element that might represent a threat to anyone in university. But I also want to say that there are many Jewish students among them, and again, this is what gives me hope that the new generation doesn't buy anymore what has been the narrative sold by Israel.
So there was Francesca Albanese, and you heard Crystal say, you're not the only one being accused of being anti-Semitic. And previously in that interview, Sagar brought up and asked the question, are you anti-Semitic? Because our State Department has accused her of being anti-Semitic.
Yes, Matt Miller.
Here's that clip.
One of the reasons that we reached out to you originally was a response from the U.S. State Department where they appeared to imply that you were anti-Semitic. So we have some of the comments here from the State Department spokesperson Matt Miller, and we'll get your reaction. Let's take a listen.
We have for a longstanding period of time opposed the mandate of this special rapporteur, which we believe is not productive. And when it comes to the individual who holds that position, I can't help but note a history of anti-Semitic comments that she has made that have been reported.
She made anti-Semitic comments?
She has, and comments she made in December that appeared to justify the attacks of October 7th. So I think it's important to take that into account. But with respect to the report itself, we have made clear that we believe that allegations of genocide are unfounded.
So we wanted to give you a chance to respond to that.
Okay, first of all, the U.S. has never considered these, has always contested, like Israel, the value of this mandate. And this is something that precedes me and has little to do with my persona. While the comments of the spokesperson had to do very much with my persona. And I was appalled when I heard that a senior U.S. official could spread these lies, because they are lies. First of all, I've never, ever justified, it's appalling, I've never justified the 7th of October attacks. I've said that these acts were brutal, were criminal, and I've said that there should be an absolute need to have investigation and prosecution of those crimes. I've said also we need to understand where this hatred comes from. What I have rejected is the qualification of those acts as motivated by anti-Semitism, because first of all, there is no evidence of it. The second thing is that there are Israeli scholars themselves who say that it's very responsible to put the burden on what has happened on alleged anti-Semitism of Palestinians, because these are their responsibility. Elizes Israel and decontextualizes the horror that has taken place in the occupied Palestinian territory for 56 years, which might have fed that hatred. So again, I push back on this allegation. The allegation of anti-Semitism is repulsive, as disgusting for me is anti-Semitism. As a human rights lawyer, I'm engaged against anti-Semitism, against Islamophobia, Arabophobia, any form of discrimination, including anti-Palestinian racism. And what I really very much reject is that the allegation of anti-Semitism is used more and more to distract from Israel's responsibility, which is something that also not only betrays what anti-Semitism is, but creates new dangers for the Jewish people wherever they are. We need to distinguish what is Judaism and what is Israel's conduct. And I've always said, and I'm on record, I've always said any Jewish person is allowed to have all the feelings and love for Israel they want. What I stand against is the unconscionable stance of governments in sheltering Israel from accountability, and which protracts its impunity.
That's been our job, is providing Israel with total impunity for all their violations of international law, the UN Charter, you name it.
Exactly. I mean, when you think back to what Biden said about October 7th, can he never mention the 15,000 children?
Yeah.
No, it's like they don't exist.
No. The Palestinians don't exist. He never even uttered their word. He never even mentioned Gaza.
No.
It was all about anti-Semites on campus and Palestinian flags being poked in people's eyes.
Yeah, plural.
Yeah.
The hoax, the big hoax.
Yeah.
So you shared a clip with me earlier from TikTok before it's banned, and it is from a gentleman by the name of Shahid Bolson.
He's a Muslim, and he's a scholar on the Middle East.
Yeah, he's a scholar on the Middle East, and he hasn't always been a Muslim.
No.
He was born in the United States.
Right.
And
a Muslim studying Malcolm X.
Yes. So Shahid was born in the United States and raised primarily by his mother following divorce of his parents. The family struggled financially, and Shahid and his brother had to work from an early age to make ends meet. Even as a child, though, Shahid was disturbed by the gap between the rich and the poor in America and the materialistic lifestyle, which he felt devalued human rights. Shahid attended a local high school and was fascinated with the works of Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and mentioned Malcolm X later, and spent hours at the library reading. Eventually, he dropped out of school so he could spend more time at the library. You can go to his website, shahidkingbolson.org. That's S-H-A-H-I-D, King, Bolson, B-O-L-S-E-N.org, and take a listen to what he has to say. Now, he is controversial, but he's also a scholar, and he says a lot of things that I think we need to hear. He is commenting about the students on campus. And whether you agree or disagree, I think these are words that are worth listening to, because I can't help but think
absolutely
he put his finger right on it.
Yep.
So here he is.
These aren't students. They're teachers. They're using those campuses for what they are truly supposed to be used for. Education, refinement, upliftment, intellectual, cultural, and moral excellence. For taking people out of ignorance into understanding. No one's doing that on those campuses more than those young people today. Those protesters. They're teaching their own professors. They're teaching their own faculty. They're teaching their own administration. And they're teaching their whole society, their whole so-called civilization. I know this isn't a civics class. It's not a political science class. It's not an economics class. It's not a class about international affairs or about history. No. They're teaching an anatomy class. And they are dissecting American empire. They're dissecting colonization. And they're showing you the human biology of racist colonialist oppression and the tumor, the malignant tumor of Zionism. And they're teaching you how to remove it. They're teaching you how to remove that tumor. They're teaching a class on the surgical extraction of an ideology that has metastasized in the American body politic for over 75 years and that has been steadily destroying that country for decades. Little by little, but faster and faster with each passing year, moving even more rapidly, spreading even more rapidly in the past 6 months. And yes, they're teaching you that this tumor developed because the body was susceptible to it, because it was unhealthy to begin with. And they're trying to teach you how to cure yourself. They're trying to teach America how to cure itself, because the cells in the American body politic that mutated into the cancerous support for Zionism that's devouring that country's legitimacy, its credibility, and its viability today, they've been exposed to dangerous elements all along. Carcinogenic elements like white supremacy and bigotry, radioactive global hegemony, Islamophobia, and the parasitic military-industrial complex. Oh, you've been unhealthy for a very long time now. And now that tumor is eating you alive. And those students who are the real teachers of Columbia University, of Harvard, of Berkeley, the Ivy League, and every other university campus that's involved in the protests, they're trying to teach you how to finally save yourselves. But we all know you're going to fight it. We all know that you're too arrogant and too stubborn and too sick to cooperate with your own treatment. Zionism and the neocons have become like a cancer in the American political brain. So no one expects you to think clearly. So I would tell the protesters, you need to understand where you are right now, what space you have entered, because you've entered the arena of testing. And this isn't the kind of exam that you may be used to. Now, this is the arena where your conviction is going to be tested. Your resolve is going to be tested. Your commitment is going to be tested. Your determination is going to be tested. And as is appropriate for the prestige of your universities, this test is going to be rigorous. They're going to try to make you do one of two things. They're either going to try to make you give up, or they're going to try to make you sabotage yourselves. And they'll do this by violence. They'll do it by punishing you. They'll do it by rejecting your demands, by threatening you, by vilifying you, by misrepresenting you, by lying about you, by trying to make you think that they have the power to steal your future from you. Basically, they're going to do this by treating you the way the Zionists treat the Palestinians. But I'm telling you, what you're doing is transformative. And I'm not just talking about how what you're doing is something that will transform your country. No. I'm talking about how what you are doing has already transformed you. Once you decided to do what you are doing, you're more than what you were before. You're more than what you were before. You're more than yourselves. What you're doing is bigger than you, and that makes you bigger than your own selves. I'm telling you, you are an instrument collectively. You're an instrument for justice. You're an instrument for humanity. You're an instrument for peace. So if you understand that, then you can understand that you are not actually the ones being tested. You're the ones administering this test. America is not testing you. You're testing America, because that's what you are for your country. You're a test for your country. You're a test for your society. You're a test for your people. They're being tested with you, and truly, their future depends on whether they pass this test or not. Their future depends on whether or not they cooperate with you in the cure that you're trying to offer them, the remedy that you're trying to get them to accept, so that they might finally purge their system and their society and their culture from the lethal toxins of colonization, Zionism, apartheid, and genocide. I know that they're telling you that you're going to be suspended. You're going to throw away your education. You're going to throw away your opportunities, throw away your future career, your freedom, your privilege, and so on. But believe me, that's delusional. They're in no position to threaten you. Well, how are they going to threaten to take away your future when you're the one who's offering them a future? Because there is no future in Zionism. There is no future in American or Western colonization in the Middle East or anywhere else. It's bad enough that their history is full of that, but there's no place for it in the future. No. You're their successors. They're not your successors. Tell me, when did an older generation oppose their own successors and win? No, time's not on their side. They think that they're fighting you from the top of the hill, but they're already over the hill. And there's no going back up. It's only downhill from here for Zionism. So you just keep pushing and watch them just roll down that hill into discredit, disgrace, and infamy. And as for your education, if you're worried, if you're actually worried about your future, your education, your opportunities, and so on, then believe me, you will be welcomed with open arms like heroes in any Muslim country in the world and any country in the global south. And you know, and I know, that that's where the future really is anyway.
Pretty powerful stuff. I couldn't find anything in there that I would contest, except the Muslim countries. I wouldn't count on Saudi Arabia too much.
No, I wouldn't either. Yeah. The thing that really has me over the edge, when did the elders defeat the young people? Well, it didn't happen in Vietnam.
No.
The young people won.
Yeah.
Eventually, it took time, but the young people won.
The union, look at the labor movement, look at the civil rights movement, gay rights movement, all these things.
All these things. And Biden.
It's the young.
Yeah. How many deferments did he get? Don't understand how these people of our generation, of our age, our advancing age, don't get it.
These students are not individuals. They're a movement. They're a community. You know, they're all based on love and mutual respect. And all you had to do was see these encampments. You know, some of it, reminded me of the Occupy movement, but this is much more focused, and their messaging, their everything about them is so much more coherent and unified.
Exactly. And
Occupy was all about against. This is against, but it, even beyond that, it's for. It's for Palestinian liberation.
Mm-hmm.
Liberation of all peoples.
And who can argue? And, you know, there aren't many, but there are a number of colleges, of universities that have solved the problem. And how did they solve it? They said to the students, okay, we'll listen. That's all they have to do.
And the first one to actually enact what they wanted, what they demanded, BDS and severing of ties with Israeli Zionist agenda, was Evergreen College in Olympia, Washington. That's where Rachel Corrie, she had been a student there before she joined the International Solidarity Movement.
And when I heard that, it almost brought me to tears.
Me too.
Because she is one of those voices from the past who was screaming for help.
Yep.
For humanity, and was bulldozed. And the Israelis would put her image on pancakes.
Yeah.
That was their response. The Israelis, not the Jews, the Israelis would put her image
on pancakes. And all of the displays and remembrances of her, she was in Rafah. She was an American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And did we hold Israel accountable? No. Yeah. They can kill American citizens anytime they want.
Yeah. And we can mention the USS Liberty.
Yeah.
But we already have in previous shows and what Shereen went on there. Heckler,
the Palestinian American journalist who was murdered.
Yeah. I mean, I'm tired. So, but I want to add on, what does Veterans for Peace think? Well, you can just go to our website, veteransforpeace.org, where we clearly have a statement which starts, the students are absolutely right and may be saving our humanity. And then the statement goes on, Veterans for Peace applauds the students who are protesting against the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Palestinian. These courageous young students are doing the right thing at the right time. The students are absolutely right, and they may actually be saving humanity, said Veterans for Peace President Susan Schnall, of course, who has been in the belly of the protest beast. Peace-loving people should applaud them, help them, and join them. We are grateful that many people, including veterans, are doing just that. Nonviolent student encampments on hundreds of college campuses in the U.S. and around the world are providing the light of hope in an otherwise hopeless and shameful moment in human history. The U.S. and European governments are complicit in Israel's daily crimes against humanity in Gaza, while the world's governments and the United Nations are unable or unwilling to act. As much as we are grateful for the young people taking the lead in resisting genocide, Veterans for Peace is equally appalled at the violent repression of peaceful protesters by university administrators and collusion with local and state police. We remember the massacres of anti-war students at Kent State and Jackson State University in 1970. We absolutely reject House Speaker Mike Johnson's call for National Guard to be deployed to the campuses. We categorically reject the slander and lies from our so-called political leaders that are being faithfully broadcast by corporate media. We have heard all of this before, baseless charges of violence, chaos, outside agitators, and anti-Semitism. You get the gist of that statement, and that statement, the complete statement, is at veteransforpeace.org. So we have clearly come down on the side of truth, humanity, democracy, compassion on the students.
I'm so moved because every one of these demonstrations or every one of these segments on TikTok where the students themselves are talking, explaining why they're doing what they're doing. And I am so moved by them. I'm just so grateful for them and respect their incredible courage and their, you know, their ability to clearly communicate what they're doing and why they're doing it. And they are not going to be intimidated. They're not, you can't lock them all up. That's just, they're not going away.
And we hope. Now, let me ask you a question though. When you scroll through TikTok, how many of these student protesters come out and saying, kill the Jews, eliminate Israel? 1, 2, 10?
No, the only time you hear that is either from Zionist thugs at UCLA or obvious people who are not in no way connected to these campus, these encampments or these movements. And they're just across the street or whatever, and just saying, you know, ridiculous, horrible things that then Mike Johnson can quote and say, it's all, that's what the students are all about.
So it's Zionist instigators.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, that's, and many of them are paid. I saw an interesting post the other day, and it was actually, it might have been Mondawise. They have a lot of good sources, but they were talking about an article in Haaretz that they kind of tagged on to a post by a young Jewish woman in Canada who said, growing up as a Jew, her family have to stay away from the synagogue because someone had called in a bomb threat. And it would have, you know, several times a year this would happen to them. Nothing ever came of it. They never could find anything. But there were other synagogues in that area that experienced the same thing. And all over Canada and in the United States, it wasn't that uncommon for bomb threats to be called into either synagogues or Jewish community centers. Well, Haaretz had an article on an Israeli, young Israeli. I think he was not even, I think he was like maybe 19 or 20, who had been arrested, and that they had found that he had made something like 20,000 bomb threats. He said he'd made, you know, over $100,000 doing this, and it was $200,000. And the obvious purpose behind it was to feed, you know, insecurity and fear in American Jews, to strengthen the notion that Israel is the only place where they can be safe. I'd never thought about that.
Well, the articles in Haaretz do talk about these fake bomb threats, but do not identify who is paying this teenager this money. But it does show the level of cynicism and skepticism that is swirling around Israel these days, to think that the government could be behind it. But, you know, you got to remember what Krishna Madan said, I guess, a couple of months ago, that Theodor Herzl, the kind of the father of Zionism, said that anti-Semitism would be an ally in the creation of the Israeli state.
Yes.
So, I mean, there you have it. We've already talked about, and we've already pointed out about the lies that were said on Holocaust Remembrance Day. And so Crystal did point out one other thing. She asked the rapporteur one other thing, and we're going to see if Biden again is a liar. So here it is.
So to start with, I wanted to get your reaction to some breaking news from yesterday. President Biden saying that he would halt some weapon shipments to Israel if they launch what he described as a major invasion into Rafah. Given what you know about the humanitarian situation on the ground in Gaza and in Rafah specifically, I wonder if you could speak to the significance of his comments.
I welcome this decision. I wish it had come earlier because the situation in in the Gaza Strip is catastrophic. And of course, all the more in Rafah, where 1.5 million people are amassed, including 600,000 children. The fact that there is no new shipment of weapons sent to Israel, again, is positive, although I understand that Israel's reaction has been that they will use what they have.
So Biden said he's going to withhold some weapons, not much, but withhold some weapons if there's a full-out invasion of Rafah. So this is from 972. It says, and this is today's update, and this is Sunday,
May 12th.
And it says in 972 that Israel's long-threatened invasion of Rafah has begun under cover of intense aerial bombardment Tuesday morning. Tuesday, Israeli forces moved into Gaza's southernmost city, which has become a shelter for 1.5 million Palestinians with nowhere else to go. This is the moment they most feared, carrying the potential greater than anything we've seen so far. Gazans counted on the world to stop this invasion, and the world let them down. All right. Then from Haaretz, Biden says Israel has not shown the U.S. credible plan to prevent Hamas from reestablishing its presence in the areas of Gaza. The IDF has left warning Israel could face an enduring insurgency. The Biden administration has reportedly offered Israel intelligence on the location of Hamas leaders in exchange for avoiding a major Rafah offensive. Well, the major Rafah offensive has started. And so they tried to say, we're going to withhold weapons. And now they say, we're going to help you with intelligence to try and find Hamas. Please don't attack Rafah. Well, apparently, Israel is ignoring that, to the point where, according to Haaretz, Egypt announced it is joining South Africa's petition against Israel at the ICJ due to its military operation in Rafah. Egypt is right across the border. They know what's going on. So they're joining South Africa.
Well, they haven't said any more in the last few days about the Rafah crossing or the other crossing in southern Gaza. There's no food aid. There's no humanitarian aid entering, period. None, zero.
Yeah.
I mean, the North has been without it for, a couple of months now, practically. If nothing changes in that equation, we're talking about within a matter of weeks, we're going to be talking about not 40,000, not 50. We're going to be talking about hundreds of thousands dead from the deliberate starvation of 2 million people.
Exactly. And 1.5 million people have been forced to relocate down into Rafah. Yeah. And now the attack has begun.
They're being leafleted to go to some godforsaken area with no resources whatsoever there. No shelter, no water, no food, no health care, no hospitals.
Just force them into the Mediterranean. Well, on Monday, we did get an update from Breaking Points from Crystal and Sagar, and I want to share just a real short clip to see if Biden and the administration was really going to suspend weaponry if Israel invaded Rafah. So here's a clip.
So there you go. Even the State Department saying, like, what the Israelis are selling is completely preposterous here in terms of their Rafah invasion. Now, will this administration actually do anything is a very open question, to be generous. We've already seen, similar, like, Weasley bullshit language from Biden. They have already done an invasion of Rafah. They've already told 300,000 Gazans that they have to move or else they're going to be bombed and killed. So this is quite a significant military invasion already, but Biden and co. still leaning on this language of, well, it hasn't been a major invasion, so we're not going to really do anything. And another thing, Sagar, I'm sure you probably saw this too, and some of like the big New York Times, you know, propaganda piece about inside the Biden administration, blah, blah, blah. In that piece, they say, even this, you know, halting of the one shipment of 2,000-pound bombs, it doesn't really matter. They have sufficient bombs to do whatever they want to do. They're still fully intending on shipping the entire, you know, $14 billion in aid that was just passed that is more symbolic than it is actually meaningful to the Israelis' war effort. So important to keep that in mind as well.
So there it is. Biden's word. Blinken's word. The administration's word. You just can't count on it. And like Sagar likes to say, words matter. So I need to say thanks and give credit to Breaking Points and Crystal Ball and Sagar and Jetty for really good coverage and a really good discussion with that UN rapporteur. So Harvey,
share this with your friends, with your family. You've got to make some noise. We can't be silent.
We better leave it there. That's just our update with some of our clips. So to finish up with a song, Harvey got back to me later with this song by R.B. Morris. That's How Every Empire Falls.
He caught a train from Alexandria, just a broken man in flight, running scared with all his devils, saying prayers all through the night. Oh, but mercy can't find him, not in the shadows where he calls, forsaking all his better angels. That's how every empire falls. Out on Sunday morning, like echoes from another time, and all our innocence and yearning, and sense of wonder left behind. Oh, gentle hearts, remember, what was that story? Is it lost? For when religion loses vision, that's how every empire falls. He toasts his wife and all his family, the providence he brought to bear. They raise their glasses in his honor, although this union they don't share. A man who lives among men, but still a stranger to them all. For when the heart is never open, that's how every empire falls. Padlock the door and board the window, and put the people in the street. It's just my job, he says, I'm sorry, and draws a check, goes home to eat. At night he tells his woman, I know I hide behind the law. She says, you're only taking orders, and that's how every empire falls. Through the country, a hard rain falls on the sea. If terror comes without a warning, there must be something we don't see. What fire begets is fire, like torches thrown into the straw. If no one asks, no one